Hi, I'm Sandy Swallow. I'm Oklala Lakota and Northern Cheyenne. I've been an artist for over 30 years, and through my artwork have portrayed my heritage. Now I'm starting a brand new venture called Lakota Link, and I'm here to share with you, and I hope you enjoy it. Lakota Link. Greetings from the home of the Seven Council Fires, land of the 1868 Fort Laramie Treaties, bringing stories old and new of Lakota values, courage, respect, wisdom, to name a few. Well, hi. I'm excited to be back, and I want to introduce you to Scott Simpson. And Scott, this is my first collaboration, and I wanted to let people know about how this came about and what kind of person Scott is and why I chose him to collaborate with me. By the way, this is kind of a surprise sort of thing here. Scott, would you kind of tell me a little bit about where you grew up?
Sure, Sandy, thanks. And and I'll just say it's an honor for me to be able to be in this collaboration with you. I'm super excited about it. I grew up mostly in Nebraska, a small town, York, on
I-80. I-80 where?
Just about 45 minutes west of Lincoln.
Oh, okay.
So on the east, more eastern side, but kind of toward the middle. And I also, when I went to high school, when I was about 14, my family moved down to Lubbock, Texas. So that's the other place that I grew up.
Wow.
In Lubbock, Texas, which is just at the base of the Texas Panhandle out in West Texas.
I think everybody's heard about Lubbock, Texas.
Yeah, yes. Yep. And so anyway, but both of those were, and Lubbock's a much larger place. York was a very small place, very rural. And my parents were both educators. Both worked at the college that was there in York, which was a junior college at the time. So I grew up, you know, running around the streets, and we had brick streets in York. It was a very traditional kind of Midwestern town. Riding my bike out on until we got past the streets, and then we had some little dirt trails we'd ride around on, and lots of stuff. But my parents were both educators, and because of that, I think they knew how to support me in ways that sometimes parents struggle with. You know, school is a hard thing. And kids, when they leave the house for the first time, you know, when they're five or so, and they go off to school, suddenly the whole world opens up because people use different words than we used at home. People eat different things. People have different ways of seeing things. And my parents were always really, really supportive of me both learning new things, but also supporting me. The number of times when I would come home and maybe I'd be in trouble for something, I created mischief just like any kid. But my parents wouldn't just immediately assume I was in the wrong. They would get the story from me, and then they would go talk with the teacher. And if there was a problem on my end, you know, they'd certainly deal with that. But if there's a problem on the teacher's end or on the school's end, they would definitely advocate for me. And I felt like a lot of my friends' parents didn't. If they got in trouble, it was just, you're grounded or you're getting a whipping or whatever it was that family did. And there was no argument about it, no listening to what maybe the teacher or the school had done improperly.
Well, you were blessed then on your growing up, and I'm thinking that kind of has made you the man you are. I especially am impressed with your credentials on the Native American Society, and that's why
Yeah.
I wanted to collaborate with you. So can you tell me a little bit about, we'll start with your education and about your projects that you've taken on.
Sure. And I came to, right now, the one of the big focus areas of my work is supporting Native American education in schools in South Dakota, North Dakota, but also in Wyoming and elsewhere. But that's not what I necessarily went to school for. I got my bachelor's degree in teaching, high school, and I taught English, and I taught theater, and I taught speech. I went on to get a master's in curriculum instruction, which was focused on English. I taught at the college level, both English and theater, and I also taught teacher preparation. So I taught in a lot of education programs. And then my PhD was in creative writing, I had a focus on poetry, but I was also always a songwriter. And the two are linked. They're not the same thing, but they're very linked. And so that's what I really wanted to pursue as my passion. I was teaching for a number of years. I got out of higher education, taught at Black Hills State for a little while. But when I got out of that, I began my work at TAI. TAI is Technology and Innovation in Education, officed in Rapid City. I began working on a lot of schools that were on reservations or that were serving a higher population of Native individuals. And I was doing work that was good stuff, but I felt like we were missing the real core of what needed to happen, because the Native students, you know, we have an ugly history of assimilation programs in our country, where we literally, you know, like General Pratt said, kill the Indian to save the man, where they had, you know, boarding schools where they tried to eliminate all elements of Native American culture or language or anything else and just make them into little white kids. Well, we're not like that now, but still, for the most part, our education system doesn't have a very good representation of Native people and Native perspectives. And so I got involved when the elders who had written the Ocheti Chacoin Essential Understandings invited me and a colleague. They said, we have these understandings we've written. They're going to use them in schools, but we don't know if teachers are going to know how to use them, or they're going to be afraid to use them, because if they're a white teacher, they're going to be nervous because it's not my culture. I don't know how to do that. So that's really where my work of this sort started, in helping teachers, whether they're Native or non-Native, to figure out how to really use the essential understandings that the elders had written and bring that into their classroom. So if I'm a science teacher, then I have to teach science, but I'm also teaching those essential understandings, embedded, flavoring the science, and teach it in a good way so that they're both working together.
Oh, wow. So can you explain to me a little more about this project with the elders? By the way, people, I am an elder.
That's right.
Because I have some understanding of it, but I know you dealt into the values.
Right.
Lakota values. Can you explain a couple of these values?
Sure. What I'll do is I'll mention what the essential understandings are. They're broad areas that the elders identify. This is what we want our children and our grandchildren to know about themselves, and what we want our neighbors to know about us from an Indigenous perspective. And so there are things like the interconnectedness with the natural environment. There are things like knowing that my identity is both individual, but also part of my tribe, and that there's no generic Native American. you know,
right?
Like the movies, and other things like kinship systems, the way we engage with our family, storytelling and the role that that plays, knowledge about things like treaties and policies that have impacted Native American people. And most people have only heard the perspective coming from the U.S. government, not the perspective coming from the indigenous people. So those are the sorts of things that the elders, and they're large, broad categories, so that if I am teaching, let's say, English, and we're reading a poem, let's say, written by Henry David Thoreau about his time spending time in nature by himself on Walden Pond. Well, I can take that lesson that I'm already teaching about the poetry of Henry David Thoreau, and I can connect it with essential understanding number one that talks about our interrelatedness with nature, and we can both compare and see how they're similar and see how they're different and see how the indigenous perspective helps us understand the poem better, and how maybe Thoreau's poem helps us understand a little bit more about what the indigenous people of this area were talking about. And then I make personal connections with it out of my experience in nature.
Okay, well, wow.
It's exciting. It really is.
It is. It's, you know, when I thought about this exciting new project that I'm in going to journey on in my life, I thought to myself, I've been wanting to do this for many years and had it in my mind, but I didn't have the knowledge or the ability since I'm not a musician. Now, Scott, with his academic areas, he really kind of has failed to let you know his musician ability. And can you tell me a little bit about when you started liking music and what it means to you?
Absolutely. I could talk about music all day long. So you may have to edit this. I have liked music from the very beginning. In my bio, I used to put that I was writing songs at least by age 4, and which is another thing that my parents did when I was really little, and it was because my mother was going to school and she was becoming a reading teacher. She bought a little cassette recorder, which not everybody had back in those days, but she would record me because she would have me read things and she'd record my talking and stuff because she would use it for her classes that she was taking. But she also would let me record, just to record stories or songs that I would make up. So that was really my first entry. I had guitars. They even, my parents let me have guitar lessons and piano lessons. I quit piano lessons on the first day. I quit guitar lessons after they wouldn't let me play anything other than Old MacDonald. And I was just tired of that. So anyway, I kept working on that, but it wasn't really until I finally got to college. Now, in high school, I played drums in the band. In college, I just said, I'm going to be part of this. And I got into this band that we were having at college, that the college would sponsor, and we would go around to camps. And it was kind of a recruiting tool. The band was called Friends. And I was, they said, oh, well, you played drums, and so you be our drummer. I bought an old Hondo II acoustic guitar, which is just at a pawn shop. And I said, if I'm going to go, I'm going to be with a bunch of other guys, and they're playing guitar, and we're making music. And I'm going to pick up my guitar skills again, because I'm going to be writing music. I'm going to be writing songs because that's what I've always wanted to do. I like playing other people's songs, but I really like writing and composing songs. So I traveled that summer and picked up the skills again. And ever since then, I just haven't put it down. We've made music on, I've had just recording equipment of one kind or another for a long time. But beginning in about 2000, I got digital recording music, which means I could really record higher quality music and put it out, publish it for public consumption. And the technology has gotten even better ever since then. So for the last 23 years, I've put out now to date about 40 albums in 23 years. I've got a little more than around 550 individual digital songs or instrumental pieces that are out there that are on Spotify and Apple Music and all those places. And people, what's nice about that is I can see where people are who are listening to it. So I've got people all around the globe who listen. Not so many that I make tons of money, but I've got people, you know, in Stockholm, Sweden, and in India, and in Russia, and in Dublin, who listen on a regular basis to my music, and so I've got this community that's global, and that's just been really wonderful.
You know, I'm kind of a simple person in a lot of ways, and I get emails and correspondence from people all over too, and I'm always thinking, how in the world do they know my name and how? And it's usually the internet. So, well, my part of this, which I was so glad that Scott kind of was able to. I have this vision. And he was able to grasp it and bring it down to a level where we could share it with other people. And I'm not going to tell you yet what it is, but I'm going to give you some hints. And just to tie this in with Scott, you know, and to refresh your memory about me a little bit, I stayed with my Aunt Josephine Hamilton on the Pine Ridge Reservation for a couple of years, and they had a big ranch, and Uncle Bud always had a paint horse. That was his kind of his very favorite. In fact, I have a picture of his paint horse, and I remember actually when I was 12, I stayed with her that summer and helped her. And I remember helping to ride and gather cattle. And I don't remember my horse, but I remember was crossing a dam and it laid down in the dam and my leg got caught underneath it. And it was kind of a scary time for me, but it's like growing up around horses and having a love of horses. And, you know, they're just kind of, I would say they're like dogs in the way that you can communicate with them and you can really grow in love with them. I'm going to give you a little snippet of my boys, Clint and Matt, talking. And when we had a ranch, it was a farm ranch down at Oral, South Dakota. And unfortunately, we lost it just because of the whole times. You know, a lot of our friends lost their places too. But the one good thing that I will say is it helped my kids. It helped them become good, hardworking people. And I'm proud of all three. I have three. I have Clint's my oldest, and then Jackie is my daughter, and Matt is my youngest. And I'll play you right now this little snippet of a conversation. I put them on the spot. I made them record on my podcast, which they've never done before. So I'm reviving Lakota Link, and I wanted to introduce you to my sons, Clint Morgan and Matt Morgan. They are on our ranch out to Oral. So, Clint, tell me some of your memories of the ranch.
A lot of hard work and very little reward.
You was fed pretty good, as I remember.
The food doesn't count.
So,
I can't.
Can you remember riding horses much?
Yeah, I rode a lot of horses.
Tell them about the worst one you rode.
A Shetland pony named Eric. He was a miserable horse.
Here's a little hint for you out there. If somebody gives you a horse, you better not take it.
It's a free horse for a reason.
Exactly.
Yeah, he was a wild one. He used to buck me off every day.
That's what made you tough.
Yep.
How about you, Matt? Can you remember riding much?
I remember riding with Jackie and Quint. Mm-hmm. And they used to like to go fast bareback. I remember that. But I didn't ride a lot of horses myself, I don't think, growing up. But I always rode with them.
Yeah. Well, you was little then.
Yeah.
I conned the boys into being on this new Running the Milky Way music, and I'm real glad they decided they'd do it for me, and thanks a lot.
Yeah, no problem.
Yep.
Okay. Make me rich and famous.
And pretty.
I'm already good looking.
Now we might edit some of this. Thank you, Scott, for taking the time to be on my podcast, Lakota Link. And thank you, listeners, for taking the time to listen. And I hope it intrigued you enough that you'll tune in next week when we're also going to tell you more about what's going to be happening and my new adventure. So I would say, Oya Wash Day to you, which is blessings. Well, I hope you enjoyed our segment. You know, I enjoy visiting with the people. And if you did, go to sandyswallowgallery.com, where you can find my artwork and find some history and some background. Please subscribe to it, or if you have some comments, we would love to hear your opinion. This is a new adventure for us, and I value your opinion. This song is written and sung by my good friend, Quincy Goodstar. Lakota Link is here to share Lakota values. God bless you on your journey. Wopila, thank you for joining us.